Hello, welcome to OS News Podcast, episode number 12 for, June the 7th, 2009. Okay, as usual, it is Croc Cayman and joined... I'm joined by...
Tom Holwater.
Fantastic. Let's get ourselves into order here. We've had a bit of a horrible experience trying to get things working with the recording.
I'm not laughing.
Yeah, everything that can go wrong, that could go wrong, has gone wrong so far.
Pretty much.
So we're recording this very late, and I suppose that we're both very tired.
Yeah, pretty much. I had a really long day, so I'm pretty tired as well.
So let's just chew through this. We're going to start off with reader emails. Thank you very much. We've got two reader emails. Do you want to start with the first one?
Yeah, that's okay. It's from Darren Thompson. I'm actually allowed to mention his name because he actually, like, puts his name in the email, so that's okay. It's from June the 2nd, and it reads, "Hi Tom and Croc." Well, hi. I'm providing some feedback for your show. Thank you. I enjoyed the show immensely, and I'm pleased with the breadth of discussion my Gobo Linux FHS question... Oh, he actually sent in that question. Awesome. I forgot. There we go. Thank you for the question, because it's always an interesting question if we can talk about
it worked out very
FHS.
Well.
Yeah. I am aware, between quotes, BOS, but never ran it. Boo you, because you really should do it. And, like, real fast, it still runs mostly, so don't worry. Just search for BOS Max, just search for that, and just install it and have a lot of fun, because, trust me, you're going to have fun. Tom indicated that BOS had a much better approach in that it used its powerful metadata-based search to produce a more sensible face to its users. Well, BOS obviously had a better approach because it's BOS and, well, it kind of comes natural with the whole operating system, but it's not necessarily that the metadata-based search was a different face, like draped over the file system or anything. It was just more of an addition because you still use, like, the normal file system, and BOS does make a bit more sense than other operating systems do, but it's still a lot of stuff is still really arbitrary and with weird names, and there's some POSIX influences there as well. So you're going to see some of the same directories that you see in the FHS. So BOS is a step in the right direction in that regard, and it also has like specific folders for applications. But what's kind of weird and confusing about BOS is that it has the exact same structure for the menu system as it does for the actual applications and the files for the application. So that can be really confusing at times, where you're not sure whether you're browsing through the folders that populate the actual menu, the B menu, or whether you're browsing through the actual application folder. It can be a bit weird at times. So BOS can be just as confusing. It's a bit better, at least from my perspective, than the FHS, but that's mostly because I'm more of a BOS guy than I am of a Linux guy, so I'm not entirely sure how reasonable that is. But to get back to that, the search system, it wasn't like something to replace the actual file system. It was just an addition that allowed you to manage some... not necessarily manage, but to approach your files in a slightly different way, in a more effective way.
That's the key thing, The enabler just lets you think in a different manner of how you manage and organize and just look at your files. You can be creative on top of that. I think you were mentioning in previous shows how you could use the metadata system to be able to do contacts. And so you wouldn't have a contacts application, you were just using the file system.
Yeah, that was later on someone implemented the instant messaging kit. What was his name? A really well-known BOS hacker. Well, I forgot his name anyway. I'll probably remember it too late from now. But he actually implemented instant messaging. When your contacts, your instant messaging contacts will be integrated with your profile contacts that you had in the BFS file system. And that way you could manage, your instant messaging contact list using, attributes and metadata search and queries. And so you could like do a query for like who's online or who's not online or who's, away, and just show me the people who are online and away, but not, busy or something like that. You could do really cool stuff with it. And It was awesome, seriously. It wasn't like implemented very well, and it was outdated and wasn't updated very often, the EM kit, but really showed the power of the metadata search system that BOS had. It was awesome. I mean, you could do a lot of cool stuff with that. It's like manage your music without ever touching a music application. Like with you didn't have to like weird databases or other nonsense that
Exactly.
so-called modern air quotes again media players have. One of the reasons why a lot of media players are very slow, actually. Yeah, it was pretty cool. Moving on, you're asking, I'm curious, is this BOS tradition carry through with Haiku? Perhaps it's time for a review of Haiku in regards to its progress and FHS process, etc. Well, Haiku is basically an open source re-implementation of BOS, completely binary compatible, source and binary compatible. So yes, it's pretty much the exact same thing. Of course, there are some changes and improvements, and especially in terms of hardware support and speed and all that nonsense. But for the rest, it's basically the same thing. So it's a really simple answer. You don't get simple answers in computing very often, but in this case, the answer is simple. Yes. So, and whether it's time for a review, I'm still waiting for an actual a blessed alpha release before I would do any review. Mostly because the Haiku guys are very concerned about the image the project has, and I because I've been inside the community for a long time. I left like ages ago because I had other things to do, more time into OS news and everything. But they're really concerned about quality control and the image they have, so I'm not gonna wait until they do a proper alpha release that's blessed by them, so that I, have a certain steady point to look to. So you're gonna have to wait until the Haiku alpha is released, at which point I'll probably be like jumping around and having lots of fun. So it's yeah, and then you have a little postscript attached to your email, which says I'm highly tempted to create a Hackintosh despite the fact I. Correctly, go. You probably mean currently that I currently have two real Macintoshes just because it seems so cool. Well, if you're gonna do it, be sure to write an article about it and submit it to us, and we'll publish it. That's all I'm going to say about it. So yeah.
Okay, on to the next one. Let's try and get through this quickly. An email from Danger Seeker says, "Hello, I really like your podcast, but I must write to you to complain about the last episode. You both sound like software patents endangering developers all over the world. This is not true. Patents on software are only a danger in the United States. European law explicitly denies patents on software. While there is lobbying in the EU to legalize software patents, which fell through at least once in the US, even the big players, Microsoft, Google, IBM, and others, move to end them. Yours, Danger Seeker." So thank you very much for the email. I wasn't really a, I can't well I can't even remember what we were talking about in the last podcast. I don't have a memory that stretches that far, but I wasn't aware that we were discussing patents or were really saying weren't directly on that topic.
No, neither do I. But still, to go into your question, I was I, we actually got this email pretty quick after the podcast, and it was my I had my intention I had like on my to-do list to actually investigate how this works, because I know for a fact that there are a lot of like agreements between all the countries of the world, at least like the countries that matter in a okay, at least like most countries in the world have sort of agreements between each other. Where they share patents, so that if you apply for a patent in the United States, it also applies in the European Union, but with European Union rules, like about how long they are valid, all that stuff. And that goes both ways. So if you apply for a patent in the European Union, it's also valid in the United States. So you don't have to make your patent application in every single country. I'm not entirely sure about that, but it could be. And I wanted to research if then. If you would apply for a software patent in the United States, if that would also be carried through to the European Union, even though, as you correctly say, they're not that they're not like it's not possible to apply for a software patent within the European Union, but it could still be that because of all those agreements that we have, that it could still be that a software patent applied to in the United States is still valid in the European Union. I'm not entirely sure. I'm not a patent lawyer, and it's very complicated stuff, but that could be. And I wanted to research that, but I didn't have the time this week, so I forgot. So it's still definitely something to look into, though.
The core point he's saying here is that software patents are a danger in the United States, but not currently in the European law. Whilst that might be true, unfortunately, the world is a lot smaller place than it used to be, and you may have with any particularly maybe large company, you may have branches across the world, and that's going to probably pose a problem with that fact that you may have paintings in some places and not in others, and at least not with distributing software, if you have to then restrict who can access the software because of laws in other countries. For example, I tried to download IBM's Lotus Symphony Suite, which is their rebranding of OpenOffice. It's their own sort of fork of OpenOffice. And I selected that I was in the UK, and then it told me I can't download it. I'm not allowed to download it for whatever legal reason. It's not allowed in my country. So I had to go back and lie and say I was in the United States, and I finally got a download. But that was just an extremely odd thing to see. And I could see that probably happening a lot more.
Yeah, that's pretty weird though. But why were you downloading Lotus Symphony anyway? Because it takes like longer to actually go through all the forms and all the nonsense before you actually have
Oh man, it's a horrible experience.
it.
Good grief, it's like being on File Planet.
Yeah, I quit. I quit before I actually downloaded it. I was kind of like interested in it, and then I saw all the forms, all the nonsense, and I didn't bother. I mean, no, too much
Yeah,
stuff to
they're
go
just
through.
killing their own market there. That's just stupid. Anyway, right, we're done. Thank you
Yeah.
very much, people, for the emails. Please always email us if you have got anything to say about the show. We'll give you details at the end. But let's move on to our topics.
Yeah, well, we're gonna do it a little bit differently this week because instead of like picking like three or four topics and talk about them like really in depth, we kind of were looking at our topic list for the past week, and there weren't really any things that like screamed at us like use us in the podcast, use us in the podcast. So we just decided in the end, after like debating for a while about what we would cover, that we would just like go through each of the stories and just start at the bottom. So we're starting at like the story we ran Monday at 1st of June about .NET CLickOne support, and then we would eventually end up with the latest story that we published, which is something about a Hackintosh. I'm not sure. Yeah, the hardware to build Mac stuff. So we're just gonna go through each and every one of them and see what we come up with. Maybe there is some stuff in there that we will really be talking very long about, so we'll just see how it goes. So there we go. Let me open the story. There we have it. Maybe you wanna take this one away?
Okay, removing .NET CLickOnce support from Firefox. Microsoft is making it really hard to distrust them, aren't they? We already talked about Mono and Moonlight this week, and now we've notified of something else. Apparently, the Microsoft .NET Framework 3.5 Service Pack 1 release earlier this year installs a Firefox extension which could not be uninstalled easily. So what happens is you download and install a regular security update that's pushed to you through Windows updates if you've got .NET 3.5. And behind your back and without letting you know it then installs an extension into Firefox. And it does so at the computer level rather than the user level, so that you then can't go into Firefox and click the uninstall button. The uninstall button is grayed out. And what this extension does is still actually a bit kind of vague. I've not seen it in use anywhere. I'm not a .NET guy, and I couldn't seem to find any really solid description on the articles. But apparently it's supposed to make it easy to install .NET applications or something. It's a sort of a trigger to be able to install it if you're having to go through the normal download process. And apparently there's a security flaw in this, which means you can now install applications without the user's consent. Thank you for that,
Well,
Microsoft.
I just have to intervene a little bit there
So.
because I still haven't found the actual vulnerability, because everyone's saying it. So I even asked like in the article, like I could not find any information on Security Hole which would allow silent installs. So if anyone has any information on that, let us know. I really couldn't find anything about that, so I'm not entirely sure how that would work. It's probably true because I can really see Microsoft doing something like that, but I couldn't find any information about it. So I'm not entirely sure. By the way,
For
CLickOnce,
heaven's sake, yeah.
I believe it's also used in WPF application, so Windows Presentation Foundation, because I have one WPF application, my horrendously memory hogging Twitter client on Windows that actually used WPF, and it really has like this you just download something and you click and it's installed. It's really weird, and maybe it's something like that because I believe WPF has something to do with .NET as well. I mean, it's really a mess on that end, like what's what. So it's probably related to something like that. So you just get like a button on your website or something, you click and the application installs, something like that, if I understand it all correctly.
Well, it's just bad behavior from Microsoft or me from installing a Firefox extension without you asking, or and this is happening more often. You've now got the Java Quick Starter just appears magically in Firefox as well, and you've got this .NET click once, and you can't uninstall them because it's at the machine level rather than the user level. And I saw this coming a long, long, long time ago. There was a, this was probably, well, I don't know when this was first filed, some time ago, where they added the ability to install extensions at a global level using the registry. So it's a registry key that goes in that installs an extension into Firefox. And immediately I'd sent an email to Mozilla. I'd also written on the wiki to say that, you know, this is a bad idea. This means that any malware can just freely install stuff into Firefox, and there's nothing you can do to prevent it, and you can't uninstall it without, you know, hacking or deleting files manually, editing the registry. And this is just, you know, sure, there's no malware for Firefox yet, but there certainly will be, and there is now, of course. You've got, you know, Zango toolbar and a whole load of rubbish, and it's just adding an avenue for, unfortunately, dodgy software vendors and untrustworthy software vendors and incompetent software vendors to just install stuff into Firefox willy-nilly that you then can't remove. It's incredibly annoying. It's one of those frustrating things I find.
Yeah, so there are a couple of things like wrong with this whole thing. First, of course, the biggest flaw is that Microsoft is putting stuff on your computer without you knowing it, which is really fracking annoying. I really hate it when, you know, like Apple's like software on Windows does it as well. So like, you think you're installing iTunes, but with that you're getting an iPod drive, or you're getting an iPhone driver, you're getting update tools, you're getting all sorts of stuff. I really don't like it when software vendors do that. I mean, if I want to install an application, I want to install that application and not 10 million other things with that. And so that's really bad on Microsoft's end. And especially if it's apparently it has like a big flaw, then it's even worse, of course. So there's like two things Microsoft's doing wrong. But at the same time, it's of course also a flaw in Firefox that, like you just explained, that it allows extensions to be installed silently without you knowing it. So I would have expected that if you were to open Firefox, Firefox would say, hey, we found an extension, we're not sure what to do with it, we disabled it for you for now, would you please review something like that. I don't know. The second flaw in Firefox is that it actually allows that's not necessarily a flaw, that it allows extensions to be installed at the machine level, but more of a flaw that it doesn't allow them to be uninstalled, because it doesn't have an elevation interface, so you can't elevate your privileges, which in turn would allow you to remove the extension. So there's all sorts of wrong things going on here that together make one super big wrong. I mean, it's really weird, actually. Yeah,
it's a bad pattern, and it's going to get worse. More and more stuff is just going to freely install itself into Firefox, not least potentially malware, and Mozilla have got to deal with this, and it doesn't look like they're going to be doing anything soon at all. Firefox 3.5 doesn't rectify this in any way, and so it doesn't really look like until Firefox 4, or if they are forced to push through an update to solve this kind of, to add in the necessary UI for this. But I think this is a whole general problem with Mozilla and the Firefox project in general, is that since 2004, it's just been continually slowing down. Not so much in the amount of work that they're managing to achieve. That's been speeding up. They're adding new features, certainly, and they're improving the engine massively in the CSS support and so forth. But I think as the project leadership, though, there's just seems to be less and less vision going in there. No more sort of one person owning a particular section and just guiding it where they see fit. They've got no real head GUI guy at the moment that's prepared to say what's acceptable and what's not. So there's just too much discussion going on, and the bugs are not getting chewed through quickly. And a problem like this, with having to add UI to sort out the removal of extensions, etc., it's probably going to take them months to sort out.
Yeah, it's really weird that I didn't like see this coming, because it's pretty obvious that it's not really a good idea to have something like this and not being able to uninstall them. I mean, it's pretty obvious to me, at least. I don't know about the rest of the world, but you know, if you're especially if you're a software engineer and coming up with this stuff, then it should be pretty obvious that there should be a way to uninstall machine-wide extensions. It's really kind of mind-boggling that you wouldn't, especially in this day and age of internet and multiple users and security issues and all that nonsense, that you didn't think of this. I mean, that's pretty weird, I think.
No, we're just gonna have to see how they react to it. I mean, Microsoft have already issued an update to allow you to now uninstall the extension, but you've got to manually go and get it, so it doesn't
Yeah,
really help.
it's not, is it not pushed through Windows Update or?
Not that I'm yet aware of.
Oh, okay, well, I don't know either because I'm not using Firefox, so I have no idea. But yeah, I mean, they basically what they did is that they instead of installing it at the machine level, they're now installing it on a per user basis. So they just put it in every on every user, and that way you can still uninstall the extension. So it solves the problem, but if it's not pushed through Windows Update, it's still pretty weird, I'd say.
Oh, I mean the whole thing's been a bit vague, unfortunately. We both don't know really specifically the problem, because we don't deal with this .NET click once thing anyway.
No.
There's not much to draw out of that. Let's move on and try and get through all these topics because we
Yeah.
have got a lot to do. Next up on the list, we have an interview with, oh, I'm going to pronounce this wrong, Plemen Dragozov,
Dragozov.
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 Regarding cross-platform strategy at PopCap Games, I played the recent release, Plants vs. Zombies,
Awesome.
and I decided, I think this is pretty good. I'll email them and see if I can ask about how they make this sort of stuff. We don't usually cover games at OS News, because it's not OS related really. So I
It's a
tried
world
to
of
make
its
this.
own.
Yeah, and it gets covered everywhere and anywhere anyway. So what I
Yeah.
wanted to try to do with this was to make things a bit different by asking them, let's not focus on a specific game or whatever like that, or your normal marketing, etc. How do you cope with doing so many different platforms and everything? Because they target the Mac and the PC, the mobile platforms, including now the iPhone.
Yeah, and I really like PopCap in that regard. They're putting out some really deceptively simple games that are really, really addictive. I especially had my addiction spells with Bejeweled 2 on my Windows mobile phone ages ago. Yes, I once had a Windows mobile phone. Please shoot me now. But I really had a lot of fun playing Bejeweled on that thing. I mean, I had a competition with Eugenia who would have the highest score, and in the end, when we both quit, she had actually had the highest score. You can probably find it on her blog somewhere. We posted photos to prove each other's scores. And then the second game from them that I really, really enjoyed up until the case where I really, really lost track of time, and would start in the morning at 10, and then suddenly it was like 3 in the afternoon when I had a couple of weeks off back then. It was somewhere in the, I don't know when it was, a while ago. That was a game called Peggle, and Peggle is absolutely insanely awesome.
I have purposefully avoided it for that very reason.
Yeah,
I know
it
it's just
is.
going to destroy everything.
Yeah, Peggle is. It probably, luckily luckily, I'm not that of. I don't have that of an addictive personality, but I can really see how it could like destroy your social life, your cleaning skills, and everything because it's really that game was insanely addictive. It was something. It was actually something. I believe that specific. They have people. PopCap have people that specifically, study the human brain for how to make games addictive because it's insane what they're doing. But anyway, this is really your story, so I just.
Well, very thankfully put himself forward to answer these questions that we had set out, and unfortunately I made the mistake of thinking that their web-based games were Flash when they're not. There's actually ActiveX, so that kind of killed one angle that I was taking with that. But then that's because I don't have Flash installed on the Mac. I'm on the Mac anyway, so I just saw a blank square and I had assumed that these were Flash. So they've got their own runtime, and they generally use that across the platforms, but they actually have their own independent departments that handle all the different things. So they're going to have their Mac department and their PC department and their iPhone department to try and make the best out of each platform. And in fact, even their runtime is actually open source as well, which is new to me. I didn't really actually realize that. So they've got a website, developer.popcat.com, where you can download their runtime that they use to make their games with. So that was quite surprising, actually.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, the article didn't do too fantastic. We didn't get many comments by the users or a huge amount of pages, which is a shame because I really would have liked something better for playmen who participated. But I suppose it was just the lack of. I was hoping for much more thorough technical information, and I suppose interviewees are much more used to the general PR stuff than what we generally would like to talk about. You know, the real bits and bytes.
He's the director of engineering, and I have no idea what that means. I have no
But
idea what
he
a director
handles
of
the
en
mobile side of things, director engineering of mobile, so
mobile
he's
studio,
probably head of the iPhone and various other mobile sections,
probably.
I think. There's not much more to say about it, really. I obviously
No.
wanted to say our thanks to PopCap for arranging that, but
Obviously.
it's not sponsored or anything. They've not paid us or we've paid them or anything like that. It was just literally, I thought this game was cool. I thought I'd email them. I mean, you don't ask, don't get. Just email them to ask, you know, hey, would you mind answering a few questions?
That's pretty fun because people often ask us, like, how do we get interviews? Especially that a couple of months ago, I interviewed one of the actresses from Battlestar
Yeah,
Galactica, and
amazing.
people were like, I'm really interested. How did you like score this interview? How did you do it? And it was really simple because I wanted to ask like a story about tell a story about like islands in the Pacific and airplanes and really rich people and all that nonsense. But in the end, you know, I just emailed her. I mean, it's that simple these days with the internet. She just has a website and it has like a little contact form with an email address in it, and I just emailed her, and a surprising amount of months later, I actually got an answer. And again, a surprising amount of months later, I got all my questions answered. So hey, most of the time you can just email them. It's really easy. I'm actually now thinking of emailing the actress who portrays. She's called Jewel State, and she does what's her name in Firefly, like the cult sci-fi series. She does the female engineer. What's her name? I forgot her
I've
name.
never seen Firefly.
Oh, this is really stupid that I forgot her name, and all the geeks are now trying to kill me and burn me to death because she's like my favorite character. Anyway,
Yeah.
I'm
You're
thinking about
shouting at
interview.
your iPod in the street right now.
I'm hoping I can interview her as well because she's like a similar sort of character to Callie in BSG, so that would be pretty cool. But anyway, moving on.
Ooh, this one's fun.
BOS, yes, woo! More BOS to talk about. Awesome. I should probably do this one. It's really weird because we don't like regularly do stories about well, at least not stories about promoting other people's eBay stuff because it's well tacky. But this one was just so cool. I mean, we got it submitted in the back end. He submitted he didn't even expect it himself to be on the front page, obviously. But you know, there's just so much cool stuff in his eBay bid. It's like a big collection of all his B Incorporated BOS and B-Box. I don't know how you pronounce that word, paraphernalia or something.
Paraphernalia.
Paraphernalia. Okay, good. I don't know how to spell it anyway. And it's like everything from a pristine B box to t-shirts, buttons, lots of software, specialized hardware for the B operating system, a Danger hip top thing or whatever, all sorts of books, everything. The BOS Bible, three of them actually. I have no idea what you would do with three BOS Bibles, but anyway. But of course, the stars of the show are the B-Box. It's a dual 66 MHz model, the slower of the two. I believe about 700 of those were sold, if I'm not mistaken, and about 800 of the faster model. Anyway, and the other big one was the tablet. I've kind of forgot his name. The web tablet, yeah, the BEA web tablet. Development deck number 33, made by Qubit. Everything on the unit works. Battery no longer holds a charge. Stylus present, also including a PCMCIA CF card reader if you want to flash other ROMs that are available out there. That is a really rare item. I've never even seen a B-Box actually, so that's already very rare for me. And if I could buy it, I'd do it. I'd live under a bridge for a month if I have to. But there's never any of them for sale in the Netherlands. I once got an email from someone because I wondered if there actually was a B-Box in the Netherlands, and he said, "Yes, there is a B-Box in the Netherlands, and yes, I own it, and no, I'm not going to sell it." So, but the tablet is even rarer. It has like a really cool B logo in the top left. It's insanely cool, and this is like Really, it really is a treasure chest because there's so much stuff in here.
It's so rare, some of this stuff.
Yeah, it's awesome. It really made me very, very well, it made me giggle like a schoolgirl, as I always say, because this is really cool stuff. There's even a clock. Look at this. It's a BOS clock. How insanely awesome. Look, and I didn't even see this shot. It's got like two mouse pads, and one of them is like the BOS boot screen with the various icons on it. Oh, this is awesome.
It's so 90s, isn't it? It's fantastic.
Yeah, but it's cool 90s. All sorts of like BOS stickers for on your computer. I mean, this is awesome. But anyway, it's already up at $870, and it's about 8 hours and 20 minutes left, and it's probably going to go up a lot more in the coming hours. I think you should be able to reach around $1,200. You should be able to do that because even a B-box in and of itself can already go for 600, 700, or 800 euros. So it should definitely be possible for him to hit like the $1,200 mark for this collection. And I'd still find that pretty low. So, there's he can make a lot of money out of this one. Someone actually suggested that he should donate this stuff to the Computer History Museum. And while I understand that that would be a really noble gesture, if he can make like more than $1,000 with this, I mean, it's only going to be bought by an enthusiast anyway, so it's going to be in good hands. So, it's not a bad idea to actually sell it. I probably would have done the same because there's no Computer History Museum anywhere near here that is of any relevance. So it's yeah, this is a really interesting set to buy. And if you want to buy it, just go to the story and make a bid if you want to. Pretty much covers
Okay.
that, I'd say.
Open Solaris 2009.06 released. Ooh, it's gonna be
Yeah,
hard for us, isn't it?
2009.6 actually.
Ooh, what did I say? 2006.
2008 or something. I don't know. Yeah, this is we actually talked about because this was the only item that really did jump out a bit that we should discuss. But the problem is kind of that we don't really know a lot about Open
No.
Solaris. The only experience I have with Solaris is Solaris 9 on my Spark machine, and I only had that for fun anyway.
Oh goodness,
So.
you got way more than me. I've never even used the software once at all, so
Now,
complete ignorance.
if you would like install Open Solaris now, you'd get some different features than like a Linux distribution, but overall, the experience would be pretty much the same. So,
Yeah, I mean it's the under the hood stuff, isn't it? But they're still running a GNOME or KDE on the top.
yeah, definitely. But it's
Well, you say that, but obviously, I think the feature that I like, the one that I notice is this time slider
yeah,
feature,
it's
because
actually,
that's fantastic. That
yeah,
was great.
it's I'm not really going to be liked by Apple fans for this, but I think the time slider feature is better than Time Machine because of a number of reasons. The biggest reason is, and that's always been my biggest complaint about Time Machine, that you can't look at two different folders at the same time. So you have to, you really, it's really like a single task thing. So you only have one folder, and you can only look at one folder. With the time slider thing, you can compare, you can work with multiple folders at the same time. So because it's confined to the actual directory window, so the actual file manager window, and I think that's a much more flexible solution than the Time Machine. And Time Machine is insanely cool. It's easy to use. It's awesome. I don't use it myself because I'm weird and I manage my backups by hand. But Time Machine is really cool, but I think it's very limiting in what you can do with it. And I really like the time slider feature because it's much more flexible and it allows to change a lot more stuff. And it's also, and the big thing for me is that you can use it on multiple folders at the same time, so it's a lot more flexible. So I
But it's
think it's
simpler
better.
under the hood as well. I mean, Time Machine really is still a traditional backup, but
Yeah.
just with a fancy UI on the top. But this, however, is using ZFS snapshots so that it's a backup is instantaneous. It's just literally running one command, and there you go, you have a backup.
Yeah.
And so therefore, this slides through time extremely quickly, I would imagine. And is immensely simple under the hood, using the natural capabilities of the file system. It's lovely. I think it's a really, really good feature. I think it would be definitely worth me downloading Open Solaris just solely for that, just to see that working.
Yeah.
Because I don't think Linux has really got the time machine, and nor has Windows got the time machine thing. Apple have really. They have made backups simple because they said when they stood up on the stage that how many people do backups? 4%?
I
Because
raised my
why?
hand, but
Exactly. It's too difficult. And the Windows software side of things is just utter crap. And I can't believe InVista is still shipped that piece of rubbish that is the anti-backup.
Yeah, but the additional stupidity on Microsoft's end is that they have this insanely advanced, this insanely cool stuff called Volume Shadow Copy and previous versions. It's so insanely cool what you can do with it. But it's completely oblivious as to how, because it's so complicated. They could just, because the technology is really advanced, it comes from the server side. If they made that easy to set up, they've got a technology that's, I'm not sure if it's entirely similar to ZFS, but it's got like snapshots of each file. So it's like a file system with revisioning built in. And you can even store all those revisions on separate drives or even external drives or even a floppy if you want to.
It's the UI that matters.
Yeah, it's just no UI for it. So it's got the under the hood Windows got a lot more advanced and more complicated and more interesting backup system than macOS 10 does, but Microsoft isn't capitalizing on it. And not even a third party does it, which is really weird to me, because I figured that once Apple released Leopard with Time Machine, that all sorts of companies on the Windows side would make use of Volume Shadow Copy in a similar way, but nobody has stepped up, and I'm not using Volume Shadow Copy either because it's so complicated. I just don't know.
I bash my head against the desk for it, because it's just so silly that Apple Apple are really not doing anything special here at all. All they're doing is just, you know, it's still, as I say, traditional backup. It's just the UI on the front. You plug in a hard disk, it says, do you want to use this for backup? Yes, done. That's it. Walk away. Why can you not do this on Windows? How many years has this been possible? It's just that they have no taste. They just don't think in this kind of way in the Apple or Mac software developers do. And also, I'd say a problem with Windows is there is no clean divide in Windows. You can't back up Windows. All you can do is ghost the whole machine or just back up the My Documents folder. But all your settings are just everywhere. They're in different folders, files, and the registry, so you can't back it up cleanly. And just the mess that is Windows layout anyway. Whereas on a Mac, you've got everything that personalizes your computer is in your user folder, and that's it.
Is that the same thing on Vista and 7 now?
You've got a users folder, sure, but you still have the registry.
Oh, obviously, yeah, of course. I mean,
you can't back up sections of the registry and hope for a perfect backup.
That's not right, because the registry is virtualized now, so every user has its own copy of the registry. So you should be able to do that. There's no reason why not, because
it's not easy enough.
No, but of course not. This registry is still like complicated stuff, but every copy is virtualized anyway, so it shouldn't be a problem. The registry shouldn't be a barrier to implementing this kind of technology. I don't believe that's true. Not for a second. I mean, they virtualized that thing anyway, so you should just be able to make snapshots of the registry anyway, because it's already doing that right now. My Windows machine is running headless right now because I'm using my monitor as the monitor on my Amiga for a while, but it should be able to do that. It's no problem. The registry isn't a barrier here. No, it's just complete incompetence.
Microsoft and you're quite right. It's Microsoft and the vendors as well. And as I say, this is stupid. Why don't we have a simple backup solution on Windows? We're all used to just having to wiping and reinstalling Windows, and it's just so tired of that. It's one thing I'm so happy about having moved to a Mac to. I don't have to ever think about it. I've got a time capsule, and I've got a backup every hour on the hour of the entire machine. And if the hard disk blew up, I could just log into another computer and mount my user folder and log in, and bingo, that's my entire computer exactly as it was, moments ago. It's so simple, it's ridiculous. And they just don't have this in Windows.
I like Time Machine more because of its not because of its specific file revisioning stuff, but more because of its actual backup solution. That if you blow up your hard drive, you can just put in the macOS 10 CD, put in a new hard disk, which you blew up your previous one, and then you can just click here's my hard drive, my external hard drive, and 20 minutes later you're back where you left off. It's insanely cool. I really like that about Time Machine. I just don't like its interface, but I do like the actual technology behind it and the fact that you can get your computer back. Anyway, we were talking about Solaris, weren't we?
Sorry about that.
let me just, because we really don't know anything about this, so we should just mention some of the things that they put in. So they put in a new Codeina, which is a front end to the Fluendo store, so you can easily install additional codecs for video and music, which is pretty cool. Another thing is that they improved the support for, it's called SIS, but it's Samba, basically, isn't it? So that it works better with Windows over the network, which is always a good thing, I think. And then there's Crossbow, which I think is pretty interesting, but I have no idea what it's about because I'm too stupid on this subject. So let me just read up. Crossbow network virtualization promotes more effective sharing of network resources and enhances the ability to consolidate server workloads. Using the basic building block of virtual network interface controllers, virtual switches and interconnects, virtual LANs, plus OpenSolaris's routing and firewall functionality, it is possible to consolidate an entire distributed computing environment on a single system for prototyping, testing, and even deployment scenarios. And all I have to say about this is yes.
Whip straight over the head. I think the basic idea is virtualizing your entire network infrastructure so that you can create yourself a little you can have a nice powerful server, create yourself a set of virtual machines, create yourself a virtualized network with interfaces, etc., so that you could replicate a physical environment, network of quite complexity all inside of a machine or something along those lines. It's major headache inducing stuff.
Yeah, this is really. I'm a user. I'm not an administrator or a developer, so I'll admit that this is way over my head. I'm assuming it's really cool, and all the people that you know. But the thing is, though, with stuff like this, the people that should know about this already know about this anyway. They're not relying on iOS News to get them informed on stuff like this.
Yes.
So
Sorry, we can't enlighten you any further.
no, it's just a bit.
However, if you are an Open Solaris expert and do wish to grill us on the finer details, then feel free to contact us.
Yeah, definitely. You can even be on the show if you want to. I mean, it'd be awesome.
Next on.
Yeah.
Well, we've got last week's podcast.
Let's just skip that one. Well, we can skip the next one as well. I mean, AMD and Intel released some new processors. Well, awesome. Woohoo. What can we say about that? I mean, I was a bit stressed for news, so I just assembled some of the news from the Computex in proper China proper, as the Dalai Lama always calls it, which is Taiwan. And there's a lot of like cool new processors, and well, the one thing that is cool is the that both Intel and AMD released there, and this really intrigued me because these are chipsets for laptops, for extra thin laptops between the netbook and ultra light laptops like the MacBook Air and some of the stuff Sony puts out. So it's something in between, some magical category that I've never heard of. But apparently it exists, and it's apparently so important that both AMD and Intel are entering this market with big babooms and announcements and Computex stuff. So apparently it's really big. I've never seen any of those laptops before, but I'm sure they're here. Awesome. Two
Well, you
thumbs
need
up.
to pick up the pace a bit, actually,
Yeah.
because we're coming on. Well, the next item I think is a good item, actually. NVIDIA's Tegra 650 ARM platform ships before the end of this year. This is NVIDIA stepping up to the system on a chip game, and the whole ARM platform on the horizon of netbooks with ARM chips rather than Intel chips, and looking at crazy, stupid 24-hour battery life and things like that.
Yeah, this is insanely cool. I mean, I was reading about this, and my socks didn't literally blew off, but I just put them off myself. But it's I mean, with relatively slow processor, so we're talking an ARM 11 at 750 megahertz, but because of like additional chips and all, and because obviously we're talking about NVIDIA here, they can do full HD, so not like basically poor man's HD, but like full HD. It's 1080p, as it's called, 1920 by something. They can
By
display that
1080.
by.
By 1080, that's
Oh,
what
really?
1080 means. In
Oh.
HD resolutions, the number is the vertical height, it's the scan lines.
Okay.
So when they say 720p, it means something by 720.
Oh, that explains it. That makes it easier to okie doke. So, basically, can you like cut this out or something?
Nope.
Anyway, anyway, it can actually play back that stuff. And as anyone with an Atom netbook knows, Atom can do this, and Atom has a battery life slightly longer than my electric razor, so it's really crappy. And this one is like a it can display not necessarily display, but it can actually play. This 1080p stuff for 10 hours on a single charge, and that's just insane. You can.
Yeah, this shouldn't be insane. That's the thing. We should have had this stuff for years.
Yeah, but that's because
it should be common. This is, I suppose, you know, we were talking about Intel monopoly before. I suppose really, this is, you know, a whole part of that. It's like, I don't like the Atom platform. It's still inefficient. It still reeks too much of the last 10 years of computing. And this sort of this fantastic stuff should be normal, but it's not because of Windows, because of Microsoft, because of OEMs doing things the Microsoft way, and we've got to stick with x86 compatibility and so forth. And then you come along and you've got these better designs.
May I interrupt for you for a second? That,
of course.
You know, that even your favorite company completely switched game to x86 and kind of joined in on the whole thing.
Well, actually, that is very interesting. But, I mean, we can discuss that when we get to the item, the item at the top of the page. The whole on the state thing. So we'll get to that then, actually, because there is something I want to say about that there. But this system on a chip thing, basically, it's a very condensed die and board. You can have a whole computer on something the size of a RAM stick, and it includes the processor. They're saying here you can have 3G, Wi-Fi, and WiMAX, so you've got excellent connectivity.
We've got a graphical processor that actually accelerates flash content, and seeing how extremely slow and incompetent flash is, it's kind of weird that you actually need to accelerate it, but okay, it's good to have. I hope you can turn it off. It's always on, so it's got instant access to networking, which is really annoying on current networks, because like when you open them up, you have to wait for a bit before you get networking, which is really annoying. And also
people are used to like USB dongles as well and things like that. It's just netbooks are not netbooks at the moment. We're not going to see real netbooks, I think, until these things come out.
Yeah, what was most interesting for me was obviously the software side of things. Because apparently NVIDIA, which also works on the software here, didn't go for Linux, but Linux should obviously run on this, that's obvious. Linux has an ARM port. It actually went for Windows CE, which really intrigued me, actually. I never would have anticipated they would put Windows CE on these things. I don't know a whole lot about Windows CE, because for me, I'm a bit confused about the whole mobile offerings from Microsoft. So you have Windows Mobile, and then you have some sort of Windows XP thing for mobile in this space, and then you have Windows CE, and I'm not entirely sure what's what and how they relate to each other. So,
The Windows CE is a reduced subset of the Windows API. Even Windows Mobile technically runs on Windows CE, I think. I might need to be corrected on that.
Yeah.
But really, that's the user space is different. See, now Windows CE was even on the Dreamcast.
Yeah,
and it made porting PC games very easily. It's just basically a common Windows API, whereas a lot of the user space is different, or some features are just missing. So this would technically mean that you could port Windows software somewhat relatively easy. It wouldn't be impossible, but it would be doable.
Well, I think that if this really takes off, then I'm pretty sure that NVIDIA talked to Microsoft about making a migration path for developers, maybe implementing something that in some of Windows development tools that gives you the ability to at least to make it easier to port your software from a Windows proper to a Windows CE. I'm pretty sure about that one. Because Microsoft wouldn't want to miss out on this, because if this really gets popular, then...
Nope. No, they're being whole sidestepped by the ARM thing, so they've got to gear this off. They've got to be able to gear up for this change, and they've never really done that before. I mean, the Windows NT kernel is perfectly portable, which is why Windows CE is on so much as well. But it's interesting, really, because Linux is already well prepared for this. It's got official ARM packages for everything.
But still, the thing with Linux is always... it's available, but is it any good? I mean, that's always the problem. Here, I mean, I don't mean to anger the Linux people, because you know, on a desktop you can do really cool stuff with it. But Linux is available everywhere, but it's always kind of a question: is it actually taking? Now, how do you? Is it actually using the available resources to its fullest? I'm not saying that Windows CE is doing that, but I'm pretty sure Microsoft is working on making sure that it does. And Linux is always a bit of a, you know, I mean, it runs, but will it run good? And that's always a bit of a, you know, and at least from the videos that we have here, Windows CE seems to be doing just fine. And I'm assuming that Linux will do fine as well, but it's always like, even on various things like netbooks, you can get better battery life by using Windows than you have when using Linux. So it's always a bit, you know, is the implementation good enough? And I'm going to stop talking about this, because people are going to want to kill me. But anyway, this is insanely cool stuff, and I can't wait. Especially that's what I wanted to mention: the price. I mean, NVIDIA says that they can sell these things for $200, and but they could be as cheap as $99 if they're subsidized by mobile carriers. And mobile carriers in my country, at least in the Netherlands, are already subsidizing netbooks pretty massively, actually.
Same here.
So that would be pretty cool if I can get one of these for 100 euros. Well, dollars to euros is probably going to be the same thing. We're going to get shafted again on that one. So if they're going to sell these things for that price here, I'm definitely interested. I still haven't. I've been thinking about buying a mobile 3G contract for a long time now.
I've got one actually.
For that, yeah.
Well, I've got an Asus EPC 901 Go, which is an Asus EPC, but it's got the 3G integrated. And I went out and bought a SIM card to go with that, and I'm paying £15. No, yeah, £15 a month for. It says unlimited, but obviously there is a fair usage policy, as you get capped
Yeah.
if you go over probably about 3 gigabyte a month. And it works very well. Coverage is excellent in the UK in general. And even if in the middle of nowhere, you can still get 56K, so you can at least get online. But really, it's that the hardware is not so fantastic. It's great that we can have these computers in small packages, really. But again, the Atom platform isn't all that fantastic. Battery life isn't fantastic. I've run Windows 7 on it, I've run Linux on it, and Windows XP still is the most practical in trying to use the computer as a sort of a portable blogging engine.
Well, I switched to Windows 7, obviously, but you have like an SSD, right? A solid state drive on not.
Yes. Well,
Yeah, well,
Windows 7
that's
did run very well on it because Windows 7 will automatically, if you're on an SSD of certain
change the
specification,
settings, yeah.
it will disable anything it can anyway, and I would cut down whatever I was. The real problem was that A, Windows 7 just simply isn't compatible with this machine because of a BIOS fault, and in fact, Windows Vista is incompatible anyway, and I doubt Asus are ever going to solve it. And the install size was just far too large.
Yeah,
I
that's
mean,
a
I've got XP
problem.
down to a couple of hundred meg because I've only got a 16 gig SSD, and Windows Vista is huge out of the box, and you can't really trim it down at the moment. The tools just aren't quite ready to do it.
Yeah, which is weird because there's really no reason why Windows Vista and Windows 7 can't be the same size, the same small size that you got Windows XP to. Windows Vista and 7 should be able to do that as well. It's just
Oh
that
yeah,
it's just
it'll be
that the
possible soon enough when 7 is probably released
yeah.
because you can use. The heck am I getting a phone call for? No, I'm not talking to you at this time. It's 10 o'clock.
I was
Go
like, what the
away.
hell? Are you like murdering a baby or something? It was really weird.
He's phoning me at 10 at
I'm
night.
sorry.
No, I'm not going to answer the phone. Good grief. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know what I was talking about. We can use that as a cue to move on, I
Yeah.
think. Oh, speaking of Windows 7, it's going to be launched October the 22nd.
Yeah.
Moving on.
A look at Sony Vegas Pro. We should have had Eugenia here. Damn it.
Yeah. If she's listening, hey, always contact us. We're trying to get someone else on the show, but we're just not having the luck, are we?
No, it's kind of problematic because we tried David last week, but he was running into a couple of issues, and he isn't here right now. So, and I don't think even Eugenia would be interested because Eugenia really hates podcasts. So I don't even think she's listening. She finds them inefficient, and she has a point there actually. If I want to say
Yes, I
something,
agree.
I'll write about it, and she has a good, very good point. But anyway, if you're into videography, I mean, Eugenia is like a really, especially like the pro zoomer thing. I mean, Eugenia knows everything about this stuff. It's you've
Don't
gotten
worry, that's
text message,
my
yeah.
balance.
I mean, Eugenia knows a lot of stuff about this, so it's I really can't say anything here. I'm not really interested in the whole videography thing, but if you're interested in this, contact Eugenia, read the article, read her blog. She knows everything about this stuff. So yeah, I think we should
Okay.
move on to
Yes.
what's on
Chrome
top.
sandboxing. It's easy on Mac OS X. It's a mess on Linux.
Oh yeah, there we go. I made this item right. Yeah, obviously, of course, I made it.
You make everything.
basically, yeah, this was
It
pretty
should
interesting.
rename OS News Tom News.
Oh, please don't do that. My name isn't very suitable for that, and I don't deserve it either. Anyway, yeah, this was pretty. I f found this pretty interesting because, as some of our readers might know by now, I am kind of a Chrome fanboy zealot because I think it's the best browser ever. I really like it because it's so simple and gets out of my way. And I'm even like the features that they're promising now, even like really small features, are already like I'm already wanting to get up my torches and pitchforks because they're really putting stuff in there that I don't want in there. I'm really a, well, anyway, I'm weird when it comes to browsers. So I'm kind of...
Oh, join the club. We're going to find about that. Oh, yes.
Anyway, I really like Chrome. And one of the awesomest thing about Chrome is the sandboxing. So every page runs in its own little tight sandbox that you can't get out of. And it's really limited in what every web page can do. And obviously, they're still porting Chrome to the Mac and to
Linux. Well, we should... Porting, it's not so much porting, is it? It's they are writing Chrome for each of the platforms.
Yeah, that's better. Yeah, they're reusing components where it makes sense, obviously. But yeah, they're really writing Chrome from the ground up. Yeah, that's probably a better word. But porting makes a bit more sense when the software is already there and the engine is already there. Anyway, they're making Chrome for Mac and Linux. And this was a story by Jeremy Moskovich, which is a Chromium developer and probably a Google employee, I'm not entirely sure. And he wrote about the sandboxing and how they implement the sandboxing on... How they are going to implement sandboxing on Mac OS X and Linux. And he says that it was difficult on Windows because Windows has a lot of sandboxing functionality built in, but for some reason Google decided to make their own. There's a comment here somewhere by someone who really explained how easy it would have been to use sandboxing features on Windows, but then... The commenter also realized that that technology is Vista and 7 specific, and it's not available on XP. So,
that's the thing. Is this I remember from a while ago. The technology is partially available on Windows XP, and Google had to use an undocumented API to get it to work in Windows XP SP2.
Yeah, but on Windows 7 and Vista, there's this stuff is built in. It's everything's there. But of course, Windows XP still has the largest install base, so they had to come up with something by themselves with the undocumented APIs, and that's a mess, obviously. And then he said that on the Mac, it was pretty straightforward. There were some complications where later on, where they also ran into some undocumented APIs, where they had to do a lot of guesswork. Let me hear. One sticky point we run into is that the sandbox process calls to the OS X subsystem, just OS X system APIs. There's no documentation available of which privileges each API needs. So they ran into some problems there. But overall, it was relatively easy to implement, as so far coding can be easy. And then on Linux, I use the word mess, and that some people took objection to that, but I think I still stand fully by the word mess, because basically what this developer is saying is that they really want sandboxing on Linux, but the sandboxing APIs, there are a number of different ways to do that, and and every distribution made its own choice about which sandboxing API to support or to implement, and a lot of them even don't implement such an API. So they're really having trouble finding the proper API, and I think that situation really does qualify as a mess in my book, because sandboxing should be part of the core operating system, so it should be part of the kernel, and there is actually an API in the kernel. I'm not entirely sure which one it is. It's either... I believe SE Linux is inside the kernel, right? It's part of the kernel now. It's SE Linux. But as what I understand from SE Linux, it is really hard to use, and not every distribution makes use of it properly. So I think that qualifies as a mess. So I still stand by those words. And Linux fans might not like the word mess, but I really think...
You could say fragmented if you wanted to be kinder to them.
Yeah, but I'm not generally very kind to anyone. Well, not when it comes to OS news. So, except BOS, obviously, and Minidisc, but... You know, when it comes to software, I don't need to be kind. Software is not a person. So, I mean, I think that qualifies as a mess. And I thought it was a pretty interesting story. And of course, it really relates well to how a couple of days later they released the first test build. So we're going to talk about that. And because sandboxing is such a pain in the bum on Linux, the Linux variant actually doesn't come with sandboxing at all. So that really takes away one of the prime benefits of using Chrome. So, you know,
it just makes so much. I think this is just common of anybody trying to develop for Linux.
Yeah.
Is that there is the fragmentation to such a level that it makes so hard work for you that it often isn't practical to do so. I mean, in fact, actually, we say so in the PopCap Games interview. They were saying, no, we don't do Linux at the moment, and that's just simply a factor of it's too difficult to support. It's it would spend far too much time Trying to get the games working on the XD mounts of Linux distributions to for it to be financially viable.
Yeah, so you could even, as a developer, as a company, you could put all your work in releasing it for Ubuntu, OpenSUSE, and Fedora, and then you still have a whole group of people who would complain and would shout at you and get the torches and pitchforks out again because you're not supporting the distro du jour, you know. So it's and that's just problematic. And people might not like it that we're saying that, but it's a fact of life, you know. I mean, if not even something as I think stuff like sandboxing and being able to run applications or parts of applications with restricted privileges, within one application at different privilege level, I think that's something that should be part of the operating system by default. So macOS
Well, I
then
mean, it's
does
part
it.
of the operating
Yeah,
system, but it's
Windows
down
does
to the
it.
distributors
Yeah, and
of
that.
getting this unified.
Yeah, and the kernel guys actually so chose SE Linux, but then not everyone is using it, so it's just weird, and it makes things more complicated than they need to be. So if
It's
you,
just going to delay ultimately Chrome being available for
yeah.
Linux, isn't it, at the end of the day. It's a good thing that Google are obviously bashing their heads against the desk and fighting against this problem rather than just giving up.
Yeah, maybe actually Google's choice will put some momentum behind one
True.
of the options that are out there. So, like, oh, AppArmor, SE Linux. There are a couple of other technology. I don't know all the names. I don't use any of them. So, okay.
Nick,
So we skipped one
sorry.
story by accident.
I don't
Attentive
know how that
reader,
happens.
attentive listeners probably.
Ooh.
We missed the E3 story. It's not. We just said that games aren't really a core part of West News, and they're not. But the reason I try to put some gaming into a West News is that it's good filler material. I'll be honest in that. Sometimes there just isn't anything else to put out there, and then like a little game review or something is just some good material to put out there, and it's not our core business, but it's still interesting. And of course, this week the E3 was going on, so the electronics whatever,
Entertainment Expo.
that thing, and all the major players announced their latest games, latest technologies, the latest improvements, and all that stuff. So we had Microsoft who showed off Project Natal, which is kind of the Wii, but then taken a few steps further. So instead of like having controllers in your hand, just uses a camera to track the movement of your entire body. So feet, hands, everything, your hair, it even does facial recognition, voice recognition, everything. It's from a company Microsoft bought a couple of years ago. And that way, you can control your game, you control your Xbox dashboard, and there's a video on the website. It's pretty cool, but again, it's not available in about, it will be available in about a year. So we'll just have to see how much of what they showed, even though it was an actual working demo. We'll just have to see how much of that technology actually makes it into the hands of gamers. So it's just, of course, Nintendo had a major smashing hit with the Wii. Especially among more casual gamers. I, as a more traditional gamer coming from the from the 90s gaming stuff, and especially the early 90s, and then I stopped gaming for like I don't know 10 years or something, and then late last year I bought an Xbox specifically for Fallout 3, and got back into the whole thing. And for me, the whole moving things in your hand and standing there looking like an idiot is just really not my thing. I mean, I tried it with the Wii. A friend of mine actually had one. He was a real diehard Nintendo fan, which I was as well back then in the 90s. And then he was a diehard Nintendo fan, so when the Wii came out, he immediately bought it. And a couple of months later, he just sold his Wii because he said, it's cool, but it gets old after a while. And that's the general message that I get from the more hardcore gamers, that the Wii is fun, but it gets old too fast. But apparently, it really isn't hurting Nintendo, because there's apparently, surprise, surprise, there are more non-hardcore gamers in the world than that there are hardcore gamers. You wouldn't believe, but apparently, and all those people are buying Wii instead of their ice cream. So Nintendo is sitting on this big pile of money, and they basically realize that for the coming 5 years, they can just re-release Wii Fit and the next Mario game for, with some Wii flailing, and then everybody's going to be happy. And the same thing for the Nintendo DS. So, well, that was a major success, and now everybody else, which amounts to Microsoft and Sony, are doing a big me too, and trying to implement the same
Things are
thing.
getting really weird, aren't they?
Yeah, but I do have to say, and people are going to say that I'm a Microsoft shill again, but I don't care. That this whole thing from Project Natal does look pretty awesome. I mean, even if it's just a toy, I think it's pretty cool just standing there with your entire body and facial recognition. I think that's pretty cool.
I think it's a bit
Useless, but cool.
idealistic.
Of course.
Because I think someone noted, it's probably Extra Life Radio, I think I was listening to that, and they were talking about the same thing. And I said, "Ah, one problem I see with this is that it needs a lot of room and it requires ideal conditions such as background, so you don't have a lot of noise that it would be interfering with the detection of your body, and that you don't have people running in front of you. And how do you keep a whole bunch of kids under control so that only one's playing at a time? Isn't not
Yeah,
possible."
well, the Wii kind of has the same problem because if you, I've actually played with the Wii for quite some time, and if you were sitting there with your friends and one of them wanted to move in front of you, that would kind of turn into a problem because it wouldn't register the motions anymore. So if you were like playing a Mario Kart on the Wii or something, and you were using the wheel thing, which is really weird, by the way, but anyway,
Well, the wheel
it.
doesn't use the actual doesn't use the camera in the front of the thing.
Oh, of
It's
course not.
actually
No, you're
it's
right.
done by Bluetooth. So,
Yeah, I'm
but
picking the
other
wrong
games, yes,
example. I'm picking the wrong
certainly.
example. You're right. So, but if any of the other games where you would really need to register the movement of the thing that you had in your hand, I believe it's called a nunchuck or something. I don't know. And then if someone would walk in front of you, it would stop responding, obviously. So, you know, the Wii has the same problems, but to a lesser extent because the camera in the whole Natal thing obviously needs your entire body, and if it doesn't, we'll just have to see how well it works. I mean, and it also uses speech recognition, and we all know how well speech recognition works. Sarcastic cough. So, this is.
Interesting but useless fact. The Nintendo 64 game, Pikachu one, where it came with a an attachment that with a microphone, so that you could do a speech recognition and talk to the Pikachu. It was like a virtual pet thing.
We're
Wasn't
talking
released in the
Pokemon,
U.
right?
Yes.
Ugh.
But this was not released in the UK because the range of accents was too much for the software.
Oh, they're gonna have the same problem in the Netherlands. That's really fun. Oh, that's pretty cool, actually. I never really realized. But that would be the same problem in America, right? I mean, if you're gonna talk to someone from the South, it's going to be different than talking to someone from New York or something. So it should be
Well
interesting.
done, you've probably got a whole load of pitchforks right after you now.
Yeah, no, I mean, in a very positive way. I mean, I've actually been to the South of the United States, and I love people
I've
from the
never been
South
out
of
my
the United.
country.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, I mean, especially Southern girls. Anyway, let's move on. I don't want to put my social life out there. Anyway, other cool things in this whole thing were the new Left 4 Dead, especially for me. I'm a big Left 4 Dead fan. I'm an addict. One of the most fun games I've played in, well, a really long time. So I'm really excited about Left 4 Dead 2. The interesting thing, though, is that there are an insane amount of complaints. 10,000 people already signed the anti-Left 4 Dead 2 petition. And that may sound a bit weird because what is the problem with getting a new game, a sequel, so fast? Well, the problem is that we're talking about Valve, which is a company that usually supports their games with extra content for years and years and years. And they promised the same thing with the first Left 4 Dead. And all we got so far is a survival mode add-on, which is pretty cool, but it's not a big update or anything. And now the next Left 4 Dead is going to be released in November, which is a little over a year after the first one. And the complaints are now, well, I mean, come on, Valve, you promised us Left 4 Dead owners all sorts of updates, and we're not getting any. And now everybody's apparently working on Left 4 Dead 2. What about us? I mean, you promised us all these things, and how are you going to deliver? Which is pretty interesting, and I understand the complaints, but I don't agree with them because, you know, this is the gaming industry, and they need to make money. And in that sense, you know, every company in the end is like Electronic Arts, and it will just release the same game every year.
Yeah,
And
I doubt they probably didn't specify an exact number, and so people are just running on dreams, not on reality. And
yeah.
maybe perhaps even this whole the sequel is the fact that they were developing an add-on and then realized that actually it's probably better we spin this up into a new game
Yeah,
because we've got so many ideas or
because
whatever.
there's going to come a lot of new things in this game. I mean, there was one of the guys from Valve who was working on the project lead for the game did an interview with Ars Technica, and you know, you're getting a lot of new stuff. You're getting completely new characters, like the four main characters you're playing. You get five new campaigns. You get an entirely new graphical setting. You get new music, which really sucks, by the way. I still hope they're going to remove that. You're getting new weapons. I already said that, by the way. You're getting new. Yeah, well, if you've never played this game, it doesn't make any sense. But you're getting new special infected. You're getting all sorts of new things, and on top of that, you're getting more story. They're basically addressing every single concern that people had about Left 4 Dead. It's uncanny, actually, because they're giving everything that basically every Left 4 Dead fan has been asking for, especially the more story thing, because Left 4 Dead is really a true blue zombie game, and if you get dropped in the middle of something and you have no idea what's going on, and you just have to like shoot everything that comes at you, and people wanted more story, and Left 4 Dead 2 is going to offer that. So, you know, thumbs up for me. I mean, I'm really waiting for the game, and it's going to cost me a couple more nights. I'm sure of that. Other interesting stuff, moving on to Nintendo, is going to be a new Metroid game, which is always cool because Metroid kicks ass.
Not
Kicks
played
butt.
any single one of them, actually, unfortunately. I missed out on so much.
Oh, Metroid is
Really.
so awesome. You have no idea how awesome Metroid is. Another really cool thing that I noticed is The Last Guardian from it's a PlayStation 3 exclusive. It's coming from the same guys who made Shadow of the Colossus, which is also really already a classic game by now. And I'm really interested in it. I actually don't have a PlayStation 3, but The Last Guardian combined with another game on the PlayStation network thing, I don't know what it's called. It's an independent game called Flower.
Oh, yes.
I mean, I really want to play Flower. I mean, from the moment I saw it, no matter how feminine the game is, I want to play it from the first moment I saw the first bit of material about that. It's just so insanely awesome and relaxing and beautiful and everything. And that even that game alone would justify buying a PS3. But combined with The Last Guardian, it's going to be a pretty interesting thing. Other stuff that's coming is a new Castlevania game. Assassin's Creed 2 will be arriving really shortly. Monkey Island will return. Mass Effect 2, and there were a lot of other cool stuff as well. I mean, there's too much to talk about when
Well,
it
it's
comes
all
to
been
these.
sequels, unfortunately, so what
Yeah,
can you add to
well,
all of this?
that's how much can you do with a game controller, right? I mean, it's a secret. It's an industry based on sequels. I mean, it's really hard to come up with a new concept in games, right? So it's really difficult. I can understand that. It's not good, but I can understand it. I mean, yeah, I can understand that. It sucks, but that's just. But yeah, it's all sequels. Crackdown 2, more Rock Band nonsense. Dead Rising 2. What more do we have? We have the bazillionth Final Fantasy game, Red Steel 2. What more do we have? Well, Agent. That's a new game, actually. Oh yeah, Final Fantasy 13 and the sequel, Final Fantasy 14. It's just
What
insane.
happened to like 11, 12, and 11 and 12? I never even heard of them.
I've never actually played Final Fantasy. I don't like Japanese RPGs. I don't like them.
I played 8, I think, and that was good. And I only played that for the story, actually. I think I just used cheats to get through the battles because the random battles were just more annoying than was practical. But the story was excellent, so I played for it for that purpose, really. But no, I can't really do JRPGs.
No. Okay. I think we should move on from the game stuff because
Definitely
it's interesting but not really.
important.
No. There we go.
Syllable.
Syllable.
Syllable Desktop gets asynchronous IO.
Didn't we have another Syllable story, or was it the only one? That was last week, right? Yeah, that was last week. Oh, I really have to say though, thumbs up to the guys from Syllable who are making really good submissions to OS News. Really detailed, proper links, everything. I can just like click the publish button immediately. So in this case, Kai DeVos, thank you. Awesome. You're doing a really good job of promoting Syllable in a very unbiased way. You're just putting the changes out there, and you're not making any statements about how Syllable supposedly rocks and all that nonsense. You're just putting out there what's changed. You're putting it in a nice format for OS News, so thank you. Please continue doing that. It's really good. Anyway, it gets asynchronous input-output. Okay. Again, I'm not a developer, so let me see here. Let me read it again, just to put in my. Building is already available. Other reasoning, more automatic login. Well, I understand that. I'm a user. Awesome. Oh, this is actually. It may sound really petty, but this is actually pretty important. Installation by keyboard only. That's really good, actually. I kind of forgot that because sometimes the mouse won't work, and especially on like smaller operating systems where maybe one of your USB controllers isn't working properly, and you only have a PS2 keyboard but not a PS2 mouse. So this is really good. Wait. Asynchronous is part of the POSIX interface. Oh, in that case, it's really, really important, of course, to have POSIX compatibility for such a small operating system to make porting of software easier. So that's actually really good. And now KMe works. Oh, yeah, that's pretty good. There's a multi-threading. Okay, there we go. Yeah, I mean, this is actually stuff that I need to read four times before it starts to make any sense and starts to sink in. That's why I'm reading it again, even though I already read it a couple of times when we published it on Wednesday. But I've had a really busy week, so I've been seeing 10 million things. Yeah, I think this is pretty cool. I don't know if you have anything to add here.
No, unfortunately. Good on them for making their own operating system. It is such a mountain to rise against, but they're making good progress. They're making solid progress. They're managing the project well. Keep it up. We love hearing about it.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, now we're getting a bit on your end. I should probably turn off my microphone now and just let you talk and talk and talk and talk.
Well, we'll handle this in two parts.
Yeah.
Because I've got two parts to cover, really, ultimately. It is Opera 10. I suppose that it's OS News readers are going to be hearing this podcast anyway, rather than people who have never seen OS News. So, Opera 10 came out, and unfortunately, I
The
made
beta.
a terrible, sorry, your correction, Opera 10 beta. It's been in alpha for a short time, and they've just released this, and I made the terrible, terrible mistake of trolling, I suppose you could call it. But it did raise some good points, I would say, about the community as a whole, unfortunately. I read a really, really crappy article. It wasn't really a review at all. It was just supposed to be a page two item, if anything, with a couple of screenshots attached. But I just said it was complete fail and rubbish and so forth. And that really angered a lot of people. But the reason for doing it was that I wasn't thinking of OS News as a community, more of just a queue to push things out to as quickly as possible. Having this feeling of a rush of you need to get things out because it's news and it's blah blah blah, and so I really didn't, unfortunately, put their interests first. So that's why I made that mistake. And obviously, people came to the defense of Opera, and that pointed out just what an excellent community we've got. Really, fantastic. And I'm sorry, I really miffed them off. But it has shown just how good they are, because honestly, the average comment length on OS News must be so much greater than other places like Dig and Reddit and all that rubbish. People really, if they've got something to say, they will put down a thorough comment on various points, and
Yeah.
people are willing to discuss things as lengthy as possible.
Can I
It's
interrupt you
just amazing.
just for one
Sorry.
second? I mean, a lot of people are saying that Western comment quality on Western is degrading over the past couple of years, but trust me, it's simply not true. Actually, I think our comment quality has gone up instead of down. There's a lot more detail. There's a lot less annoying trolls. There are some funny trolls here and there, but mostly that we keep here before entertainment value. But including myself sometimes. I mean, I'm not like on my high horse or anything, that I'm not trolling sometimes, especially in the comments. Overall, our comment quality is pretty good. I just wanted to say that. I mean, it might seem as if, but people always think that it used to be better in the past, but in this case, it's really not true. I mean, I just want
No, it's
to say
better,
that. Yeah.
certainly. And the Opera article really just showed that, isn't it? That I, did something very stupid, did something really of terrible, terrible quality, worse than you would see on Dig. And the community, instead of replying, instead of stooping to that level in their replies, thankfully were very, very, very smart in what they do. And it also showed that. If you want good content on OS News, please submit stuff. Good grief, there's so many people in those comments would be far better qualified to review Opera properly, and to do it in a balanced and justified way, and to look at the details, in the way the way it needs, than what the rubbish I wrote. So really, it just shows that we've got such a smart community. If you want to see good items, please contribute them, add to it, write to it. We are very, very happy to publish things people say, especially even if you want to refute an article. If one of us writes a load of rubbish and you want to correct us, then send it our way. We're not so egotistical as to not prevent, as to prevent negative feedback.
Quite the contrary, actually. I mean, a number of times where I've wrote an article, and we've had several people writing a refutation about that. I had that once when I wrote a couple of articles about the benefits of having a microkernel versus a monolithic one. We had a couple of replies to that I published. But the best example that I have is still the whole KDE thing, where I wrote a sort of preview review kind of thing about KDE 4.0, so the very first release. And I still stand by whatever I wrote there, but Aaron Chego from KDE didn't agree, obviously, and he wrote a blog post about that where he, it wasn't one of his best blog posts, and he, I thought it was kind of like a bit like rude, but anyway, I published it anyway because it offered like the other side of the story, and in the end, that's what's important. When I write something and burn something down, which is not entirely what I did with the first release of KDE4, but I really didn't like it, but I do want the people to see the people. That sounds a bit weird, but I do want our readers to see the other side as well. So, and after that, after I published Aaron's story on OS News, he sent me an email that he was really I'm happy that I did that. And he said, well, there are not many websites out there that would do such a thing. Most of the websites are just putting out a story by the editor, and that's it. And there's no way to get you any other thought prominently on the front page, so it's a one-sided thing, right? In the end, and the Western News, at least I always try to, make sure that we get both sides of the story. So it's really possible. And the same thing here with the Opera thing. I mean, if you disagree so vehemently with Grok's story, feel free to not just use the comments, but to tear the article to pieces, so to speak, in your own story, submit it, and we'll get it out there. Don't worry, we're not very well, like you said, egotistical on that one. So,
Well, yeah, this is obviously me learning a lesson from this. I'm not really an editor kind of person, as when it comes to news, you are very experienced with this and publish very much of what's on OS News. I made a very huge mistake here, and really it helped me. The community helped teach me a lesson here, so I'm very thankful for that. We've got another Opera item on the page, so we'll use that to discuss Opera physically itself. Let us move on to Palm Pre Review. The hardware could be better, WebOS is solid.
Overall, I think this is a pretty good result for the Prey, because even like the big technology reviewers, and I have no idea why they are big technology reviewers, because I don't find their reviews particularly interesting. But anyway, so people like David Park from the New York Times, if I'm not mistaken, and Walt Mossberg from the Washington Post, right? Yeah. From the Post, they're both very, very positive about the Prey, but basically every review—it's uncanny, actually. Basically every review is the same. There are some hardware issues here and there, but the software is the awesome. That's basically what they're saying. It's what it all amounts to. So I've never seen such an anticipated device receive such similar reviews. It's uncanny how much the reviews are exactly alike in their critiques and their praises. It's very, very interesting in that sense, so that's pretty cool.
Not much I can add, unfortunately.
Oh, obviously, it was released yesterday.
Oh, Dan.
Yeah, it was the
Didn't even
6th.
notice. Good
Yeah,
grief.
I haven't seen any major stories about it yet, but it's also because I've been away most of the weekend, so I haven't had time to look at all the stories. But all the stories will probably appear on Monday anyway, so
Well, I
most.
mean, I've seen stuff in my RSS, but I just wasn't really paying
Yeah,
attention.
same here, so.
Slow and steady seems to be the main gist of it. Good, but slow and steady. And Palm were not expecting a mad iPhone rush
Yeah,
anyway, and that's not what's happened. But it doesn't mean it's not a bad thing at all.
no, I think it's actually also what probably helped is that other carriers have already said, carriers that might be more popular in other regions of the United States have already said that they're getting the Prey as well. So, I think a lot of people are more like, well, I want to stick to my favorite carrier, the carrier that works best here. I'll just wait until the Prey is released here, even if I want one. But my brother and I actually talked about the Prey today, and that we both actually want one. I really want one as well. But right now, it's currently only available in a CDMA version. So, even if I were to import one from the United States, it wouldn't work here because we don't have a CDMA network. We only have GSM. So. We'll have to wait until the GSM model comes out before we can use it in Europe. So,
We're going to really have to speed things up
yeah,
here,
I know.
unfortunately. The return of the kitchen computer.
Yeah, we can be really short about this one. I mean, this is really kind of like my own pet little thing. Especially the H316 computer is just, I love that thing so much. I have it as my background right now. It's just, I mean, you should just read the story. There's not a whole lot to say about this
No,
one. It's
I,
just.
the only thing I would say about this is something that I remembered is that there was an, a Mac app contest to called My Dream App where people would
Yeah, I
submit
remember.
ideas for their applications. The one that won in the end was an application called Cookbook, which still hasn't materialized. And one of the judges for the contest was Steve Wozniak, and he said that the cooking software it doesn't work. They had a cooking application on an Apple II, and it's been 25 years, and he still hasn't seen anything that's
Yeah.
worked on that. And I think that's still the case here.
Yeah. There is one thing that I want to say about the A316. I'm writing an article about the A316 to explain basically why I love this thing so much, and to put it in a really short fashion, I believe that this is, well, probably not the first, because there's always someone else who was soon was who had the first instead of what I'm thinking right now. But the A316 was one of the first computers that wasn't designed for either scientists or for more traditional use. This was a computer that was geared towards a very specific group of people. And right now, that's pretty common, right? Where you have computers like engineered for specific people. And this was one of the first cases where engineers and designers sat down and said to themselves, well, we have this computer, the H series, Honeywell. So there's a series of computers. There's a whole line of computers behind the A316, which use the exact same internals. But all of them were geared towards, scientists, professionals, all that sort of stuff. But this was one of the first times, I believe, where designers and engineers sat down and thought, well, how can we make some this 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 these internals that we have, this computer that we have, and how can we put it in something that people that generally, especially at that time, wouldn't use a computer, how can we put all those internals into something that they would want to use? It didn't work, obviously, because it was way too complicated, but it was, I think, one of the first times that a computer company tried to do that. So in that sense, I think it's a pretty important a milestone. And I mean, you just have to admit it. This thing looks beautiful. The red, the white, and the black. I mean, it's insanely awesome. Anyway, let's just move on.
Unix, it turns 40, past, present, and future of a
Yeah.
revolutionary OS.
Congratulations, Unix.
Well done.
I may not like you, but you're still around.
It's yeah, and there's a lot of discussion in the comments, obviously, about what is Unix now. It's just not the
Yeah.
same thing anymore, is it really? It's an idea.
Yeah, that's basically what I said in the short article that we ran here as well. I mean, if you take the original goals, I'm just going to read them out loud anyway. The original goal was a powerful operating system for interactive use need not be expensive, either in equipment or in human effort. We hope that use of Unix will find that the most important characteristics of the system are its simplicity, elegance, and ease of use. Well, especially the first part, I think, I mean, what aligns better with those goals, Linux or Unix proper? I mean, I think it's not about people from Unix moving away to Linux. I think they're moving on to the next step in Unix evolution. I mean, I think it's pretty obvious that Linux is the future of Unix, not Unix itself. Obviously, again, it won't go away. I mean, something never dies, and people who predict that stuff will die are always wrong. But I don't really see, I don't get the concept that people who move from Unix to Linux are moving away from Unix. They're just moving to a different Unix that I think aligns closer to the original goals of Unix than Unix itself does now, if you're still following me. Yeah, I'm sorry. I was at the end of my sentence.
Okay. No, not much I can say about it. I mean, it's got a long, complicated, very complicated history
Yep.
with legal cases and everything, which has confused the whole idea of what Unix actually is, by copyright terms. And now we have Leopard, which is officially, in inverted commas, Unix as well.
Yeah.
So I've got a Unix system, and under the hood stuff, it's really just a particular collection of basic ideas and basic tools, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, if I opened it, well, what the hell's going on here? I wanted to open the terminal on my Mac machine. because if you just open the terminal here, why is Spotlight so incredibly slow today? There we go. I mean, if you just look here and you go to the root of the directory and you type in ls, you're basically looking at a POSIX file structure. You're looking at the FHS with some bits bolted on top to make it usable to graphical user interface users. So it's you're seeing everything here. You're seeing bin, boot, cores, dev, etc. It's not actually called etc, I believe, though. It's got home, it's
Well,
got
what's
thought,
special
USR.
about it, I suppose, is the fact that this idea has lasted for so long. Well,
Yeah.
and an idea that was invented long before the GUI.
Yeah, I mean, it's well, as we as most OS users already know, I'm not a big fan of this whole thing, but yeah, it's still around after 40 years. Yeah, well, and you know, like I said, congratulations. Again, I have not a whole lot to add here. I mean,
Oh no, well, let's move on. We're trying to pick up pace anyway. We're not doing it.
no, we're really not doing it. This will be a long
We're not
podcast
doing
again. We're at 127 now. Yeah, it'll just be longer. I mean, people just have to accept it.
Yeah, if it's a problem, complain by all
Yeah,
means, and we will do something about it.
we haven't had any complaints about length anyway, so
No,
it's
nothing.
not a problem.
In fact, if anything, people have been saying it's good. The
Yeah,
length is good.
who'd have thought? I mean, oh, anyway, let's just move on.
Moving. Upper 10 beta.
There we go. Take it away, Croc.
Okay. So, after my complete bad, I don't know what you can call it, mistake, I then just said, okay, I respect the OS News community. I will go and write it again. I will try and do a proper sort of review. It was never meant to be a review anyway. I was merely just trying to announce the fact that Opera 10 was out. And shot myself in the foot twice. And so I went back and I wrote it again. And the problem I have with Opera 10 is the interface. I don't like the interface. I find it a barrier to all of the functionality and all of the fantastic comments that we had from OS News readers were about all that great functionality. And I sat and I stared at Opera and I thought, all this great functionality I know about, they know about, clearly. But the UI is the barrier here. The UI is the thing that irks me. And people would call me very petty or hung up for thinking that the UI is so important when we as OS News readers understand the techno. We are blessed, I would say, with the knowledge of understanding all the great functionality under the hood and so forth. But what I was trying to allude to with the whole Netscape thing was that both Netscape and Mozilla, for all the years that they were around, then all the functionality they had that was better than Internet Explorer, they still never got more than a couple of million users. Then, as soon as Firefox came along, which had better branding, better marketing, and better simplicity, and better UI, and boom, it takes off. More than any, all of the functionality in the world before it. In fact, it had less functionality than the Mozilla suite and Netscape, and it's successful. And I think this is where Opera simply is. They've got all the functionality. I do not deny that whatsoever. There's no point me going into a review and describing to you every single piece of functionality because you already know it, users. You told me that specifically. All the fantastic functionality it's got, and it's got the best rendering engine. I know that it's got ACID 3 compliance, and it does so much with CSS and everything. I would know because my website doesn't work with Internet Explorer at all, and it uses CS3 super heavily. And you'd think, well, me having a website like that, I would love Opera because it works so well with my website. But again, the UI is the barrier here.
Yeah. To explain a little bit how important user interface is, I was obviously a very early adopter of Chrome, mostly because I'm weird and I like my browser to be as minimal and as functionality less as possible. But a friend of mine, we regularly like have a little like drinkovers here in my place, and they were always using Chrome, obviously on my computer, so, because that's what's installed here, and it. Didn't take him long before he told me, well, I actually kind of start liking Chrome and I've adopted it back at my place. I mean, even though it has less functionality than Firefox, I just like the interface better. It just works so much more focused on the whole browsing thing, and the interface is so clear and clean and easy to use that I'm willing to sacrifice some of the features that I had in Firefox, and I'm willing to move on to Chrome because the interface is just so much better. And I obviously agree with him because, let's face it, Chrome does have the better interface, for at least from my perspective. And in that sense, the interface really is important. Maybe not for us geeks, except for me again, and except from you, obviously. But for the rest of the world, the interface really is important because a clean interface is the difference between people using it and people not using it. You can have all the functionality in the world, but if you have a UI that doesn't present it well, people are not going to use it, not going to find it, not going to like it. That's the basic gist here. So.
Yeah. Well, people were saying, "Oh, well, the UI in Opera, you can customize it. You can have it how you want. Opera is better than other browsers because you are the one who decides everything." And I thought, I don't have a problem with the layout of the buttons. So the back, forward, stop, refresh. That's fine. I don't need didn't actually customize any of the layout on the direct layout on Opera. That was fine. What it is it just it irks me. I didn't like how it looked, and that was a barrier to me wanting to adopt it. It would just annoy me every time I use it, especially the icon, for example. And people were not willing to accept that I could use UI as a valid complaint. You know, if I had a complaint about some particular functionality, that would be all right, but not UI, because that was. It's too petty.
Well,
But
that
it's not. We're emotional beings. Looks matter. You look around the world and you looks matter. There's just no avoiding it.
yeah. Well, I've because of all the hubbub about this whole beta thing on iOS, I decided to download the beta as well, and I immediately agreed with you. I mean, it's user interface wise, it's just absolutely terrible. And there are two things that irk me the most. Well, basically, there are three things, but you could combine two of them. And the two that you can combine is at the top, the blackness of the tab bar, combined with that weird shadow thing. It just looks completely out of place. It makes no sense. It shouldn't be there. It's stupid and annoying. And then, which is and one thing that's really small and people might notice it, if in the bottom right, the resize handle. It's
Ooh, I didn't notice that. Let me open Nobra.
well, you can just open the screenshot if you want to. It irks me beyond belief.
Oh yes, yeah, of course.
I mean, it's the same thing. Actually, we're recording this in GarageBand, and my version of GarageBand, which is, I don't know, version like version 8 or something, or 08. Let me see. About GarageBand. There we go. I hope my machine can handle this. My Hackintosh. There we go. So this is GarageBand 4.1.2. It has the same issue with having a really weird resize handle in the bottom
Yeah,
right.
I've got the same one.
Yeah, and people might say that resize handles, who cares? But I use the resize handle every freaking day. And I want that resize handle to make sense. I want it to look good. And I don't want it to stand out too much or be an eyesore or be really weird. And the same thing goes for the tab bar. I mean, I can understand, like, if the UI of a certain dialogue isn't perfect, or some setting or some preference dialogue is a bit confusing because you don't see it every day. I don't care. But the resize, things like the resize handle, the tab bar, weird shadows, plus buttons, or whatever, you see those things all the time. You use them all the time. And if I'm constantly reminded about how weird they are, it just starts to irk me, and I don't want to
It's
use it
mental weight
anymore.
you don't want. That's the thing I think about UI is good UI should be transparent so that you don't have to think about it. You're not wasting thinking cycles on silly little petty things
Yeah,
like that.
go
And
Chrome.
for you people who like Opera and who get on with it well and like how it looks, good on you, good grief. You know, I would love to have your way of viewing things and not have to be worried about, you know, such petty things as the resize handle. I would love to not have to be so
Same
petty,
here.
but I look at it and it winds me up chronically, and then that prevents me from working properly and focusing. You know, it's just an axe to grind. Opera is a company, I think. They haven't had UI as a primary thing, as a primary goal. They've just been really focused on the engineering, and they've done a fantastic job on the engineering. There's no doubt about that Opera is a fantastic browser. But the UI has always been secondary, and I think they will always be second fiddle, the underdog in a low market share until they change the same things that Firefox changed. I think they need to change their branding. I don't think they want to call the browser shouldn't be called Opera anymore. Opera should be the company. The browser should be something else, so that they've got something that they can market. The marketing needs to be improved. Firefox did get Firefox, and they did the f spread Firefox, and that went, you know, fantastic social marketing. And they need to change the UI, and they're doing something about the UI, certainly, because they've hired John Higgs to look at the UI, but it's not enough at the moment. It's not a real rethink. It's just a skin. It's just a bunch of pixels. It's not really fundamentally
No.
rethinking, you know, Opera.
Yeah, well, in that sense, Apple has been doing a major mess up as well with Safari 4 with the weird tab title bar thing, which is basically, even like the most diehard Apple bloggers and everything, basically tore the thing apart in every possible way. And that's just one thing. The other thing is the click-through behavior of Safari 4. So that's probably backfiring. And I don't believe that Apple is going to keep the tab bar this way on top as they implemented it now. And I think the same thing here applies to Opera. I mean, it might I'm not entirely sure how they ended up with what I'm looking at. I mean, I just don't understand, and I have that same feeling when I'm using Safari 4, which I am using right now, by the way. I just don't understand how someone could look at this and think, "Yeah, that's pretty good." I don't get
Yeah,
it. I
that's one of the things I hinted to in the article is how who logs into their computer each day, looks in their dock and sees that monstrosity and thinks that's okay.
Yeah, I don't understand that either. I mean, maybe we're picky or something, or I don't know. I mean, you should probably look.
Clearly,
You
you are
should
given
be,
the responses into
yeah.
the
You should probably
article.
look. You should probably look at my apartment, and you could probably understand why I'm so picky about user interfaces, because everything here is like aligned with measuring devices and everything. I should stop talking now. Basically, I apply the same sort of rigorous thing here on computers, and with an interface irks me. The Opera 10 interface, at least on the Mac, because that's the only where I tried it. It really reminds me of like those old pages on Angel Fire and Lycos and those sorts of things. It looks out of place. It doesn't work. It's weird. It's also the same thing with the dock in Leopard. It was the same feeling. It just didn't make any sense. The perspective is wrong. The icons are wrong. Everything's wrong. And the same thing is here with the Opera interface, especially the top part of the interface. It's just wrong. It doesn't work. It really, well, it works obviously, but it doesn't work for my brain. It's not compatible with my brain, which is just anyway.
Yeah, and that's what I'm feeling, guys. That's why why that was a kind of a focus on the article, because I sat there and I looked at it and I thought, functionality doesn't matter. I can't adopt this browser. I would never use this browser full time, no matter what functionality it had, because the UI would be too much of an interference for me.
Again, the Opera developers, and I'm using Spotlight again here, should look at the Chrome interface for Mac. I think that's pretty much how you should implement a Mac browser interface. I mean, I'm loading it up now. It takes a little while to load. I think that
Well,
is,
we can get that. That's another two articles up, so we will definitely talk about that because I've got it as well.
Okay, let's just I think we
But
should call it quits on the
okay, well, thank you, community, is all I would say for your very excellent responses. I know a lot of you are Opera users and you love it, and you think it's the browser for you. Good, good. We've got a browser market for choosing things, and I choose Firefox for particular reasons. And I would change if someone would come up with something better. But please try and understand that the reason I was focusing on UI on the article is not because I'm completely petty, or that I was not respecting the, or properly reviewing the features, the actual technical features of the browser. Is that that's my personal opinion. That's what affects me when I see it. Because we've all got different opinions on how we see software, etc. And there's no such thing as a complete, unbiased review.
No, that's a kind of the intrinsic to the idea of a review is that it's not unbiased, right? So, moving on, I'd say.
Yes, of course.
I think we should do
Apple
this one.
bans.
Yeah, we should do
Sorry,
this
Karen.
one. We should do this one pretty quickly because we're
Okay,
gonna run
it's
into
nothing
time.
silly.
Really
Apple
short and.
bans third-party EFFRSS app from
Yeah,
the App Store.
for some stupid reasons, for another idiotic reason that it finds some content in objectionable. Blah 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 blah.
All I said to this was that clearly the Apple, whoever who reviews this app, Apple must be employing people who have no technical skill, and all they have to do is follow a checklist, and they can't separate the idea of code from content. So therefore, they're seeing this content in there, they're thinking it's actually a part of the app, and then therefore they're rejecting it. So Apple employ better people. Okay,
Moving on.
moving on. Google Chrome.
I think we should do this one pretty quickly. We already talked about Chrome so much. I mean, it, awesome they released finally released some well no, that's not right. I'm not saying it right. They're not Chrome doesn't release browsers. They open channels basically, and they've opened the developer channel. The Chrome employs three channels. They have a developer channel, a beta channel, and a release channel. The release channel is obviously the most stable one. Then they have the beta channel, which is slightly less stable but more up to date, and then they have the developer channel, which is like bleeding edge. And then even on top of that, you have an unofficial channel of nightly builds that's even less stable and everything. But let's just leave that one out of the picture. There have been a steady stream of nightly builds, a couple of well, it's not really nightly builds because there were a couple of those builds every day. Ever since March, if I'm not mistaken, for both Linux and macOS 10, and now they basically opened the developers' channels for both Linux and macOS 10. And actually, I'm pretty positively surprised by how well it works already. There's a lot of missing functionality, obviously, to even warrant
It's
about that.
very alpha.
Yeah, it's definitely very alpha, but it works.
Yeah, we should say we are using the Mac version here that we're trying out.
I mean, it renders pages exactly the same way it does on my Windows, basically. And it does that really, really well, and I'm really happy with that. It's still a lot of slowness because there's probably a whole lot of debug code in there. So loading pages isn't very fast, and a browser itself isn't very fast either. But again, what I like is the interface. I mean, this is for me the best browser interface in the history of ever. I mean, this is it's so minimalistic and simple and easy, and it makes sense, and it's not weird like the Safari 4 tab interface. It's not a cluttered mess like Internet Explorer. It's not stale and boring like Firefox, and it's not let's skip Opera for now. I mean it's I love this stuff. I mean I'll admit it, as far as browsers go and as far as you can love software, this is really good. I really really like the whole mindset behind Chrome and the developers and how they're really making things native instead of just releasing a port with some wine code in there. So this is really good. I'm really happy with
Yeah, it's
this.
going to be a long, long time before this stuff is actually released, at least next year, isn't it, realistically, before they've got a fully polished product. I don't know. But the Mac version is extremely early. Almost nothing works. There's no plugin support. Dialogs are missing completely. But now,
Bookmark is doesn't work. So bookmark doesn't
yeah,
work at all.
this the whole idea of developer channels is basically you've now switched on the RSS, as it were. You can install the Google Chrome browser, and it will just automatically install updates now, so you can keep up to date as the, for the progress as it happens on Mac and Linux. I mean, the UI looks, it's just too early to comment ultimately. On Mac, it's a, I would say it's a little bit too light colored. I think it should perhaps be a bit darker on top.
No, I kind of like it this way because it really this is the same thing as it does on Windows. You have the default Chrome color, so it's a bit weird. I don't like the word Chrome, but it's the default a window color that Mac OS X uses, like a lightish dark gray. I have no idea what to call it, and then it puts a simple, as contrastive as possible content on top, and I think it really works very well. So yeah, I'm actually good with the white.
But it's too early to comment. It might change and everything, and of course, getting used to it. And I think that doing this on Mac is a good idea because the speed of it is already quite fantastic. Not so much loading pages, but the program itself opens up, crazy stupid fast. Fastest program I've got to open at all. In fact, preview.app doesn't even open that fast. One, no, preview.app doesn't even open that fast. So
It's already pretty fast.
impressive.
Definitely,
So
especially compared
I
to
think that's probably the
Firefox.
only thing that could possibly convince me to move from Firefox is if they can keep that speed up and I can have something that is just that instant, really.
Yeah, and you're probably going to want a plugin framework, right?
Oh yeah, but that's coming, isn't obviously, isn't it?
I
So I
hope I
mean,
can
all
turn
I,
that off.
this was another thing in the article. The Opera thing is about extensions. The only extensions I have for Firefox are to actually modify the UI, so I hate it less. That's the only extensions I use. I've got NoScript, Adblock, and Flashblock, so that I can reshape web pages, so they annoy me less. And then I've got like stop and reload, or reload, so I can combine the stop and reload button because I don't see why they should be separate. And basically other things that let me just reshape the UI, so it's a bit more simple and minimalistic. And so Chrome's already got the simple UI, now that's fine. All I need really is the ability to reshape websites. So I need NoScript and I need Adblock, and yeah, I'll be happy. I'd switch to Chrome.
Okay, moving on, I'd say again. On this date, OS News History, June 4, 2005. I'm gonna leave you with this one.
Okay, all right. Well, it's my suggestion, really. I said to people, OS News, we've got crazy, stupid history in OS News. It's such an old website. It's really amazing. And we need to make this accessible because how fast things change is you don't really realize until you look back. And so we've said here that what was happening on June 4, 2005, although David got the date wrong, didn't he here?
Now, the problem was that he put the article in the backend, and he basically in our backend you can set a future date and time, and then it will publish on that date and time, which you you have to do one extra step, which is actually press the publish button. So you have to set the time to a time in the future. So if I want to publish an article 2 hours from now, I would set the timer 2 hours from now. So right now it's basically exactly around midnight. So I'd say the time to 2 in the night, and then but that's not all I have to do. I also have to press the publish button, which sounds a bit counterintuitive, but that's just the way our backend works. There can probably be some improvements in there. But he forgot to press the publish button, so he looked at like the queue, and you'd see the on this date item, and it would say published in 48 hours from now. Awesome, but he forgot to press the actual publish button, so it took a while. It was published a day too late, and then there was something wrong with the time thing. He already fixed it, I see here, because all the stories were from 2005 and not 2004, which was what he was originally thinking originally. So it's, yeah.
But we've got a story about 4 years ago. OS News published some interesting articles. Apple announced it was dropping PPC for x86. That's one big item, and it's strange looking back now at that at all that change. One second.
Funnily
Sorry.
enough, if I'm not mistaken, this was like a few weeks before I actually joined OS News. Yeah, it was a few. I joined OS News at the end of June, I think, of that year. Anyway, it's pointless detail. But yeah.
What's interesting is people's reactions back then. Are people thinking that, this isn't possible? A Mac with an Intel chip is not a Mac at all, and PPC is better, and so forth. And people just weren't ready to accept that, or some people anyway, at least. Just and how outlandishly crazy that was, Apple's move there. I think probably one of the best things Apple's has ever managed to achieve is the fact that they had OS X compiling on Intel all those years and nobody knew.
Well, it wasn't unknown, by the way. There were a lot of rumors about that they had Mac OS X running on Intel, because they did a lot of work on the Intel architecture back when they first started putting out builds of Rhapsody. So, like the first actual Mac OS X releases with the Mac OS 9 interface. They looked beautiful, by the way. And I still think it looks better than Aqua. But anyway, it's yeah. So it was not known, but it was implied here and there that they had this running on Intel all those years.
A total surprise to me, though,
Yeah.
and this whole move to Intel really has it's Apple really have benefited from this, massively benefited from this, I would say, because Macs are no more so much. They're not so different now from PCs. It's not a whole different architecture. It's not the software is more. We've got the flexibility of virtual machines and so forth, and being able to dual boot systems, and it's making the whole Mac system an operating system so much more accessible to people who
Yeah.
want to try it out, especially not least Hackintoshes.
Yeah, but the problem with PPC obviously was that not many people were very, not many companies at least were very interested in keeping the PowerPC going for the desktop market. I mean, it was going into like really high-end products, especially from IBM, of course, and then Freescale, and Freescale was more interested in more the embedded market and the smaller chips. Yeah, it was a bit left in the middle. I mean, IBM promised all sorts of things for the G5, but in the end, it didn't deliver. And why would IBM do that? They had a much bigger market with, for instance, even just the Xbox 360. That was just one of those things that provided a much bigger market opportunity than Apple would ever give them. So it didn't make any sense for them, for IBM, to pour a lot of money into a chip that basically only IBM, or that basically only Apple would use, and maybe some IBM workstations here and there. So that really didn't make any sense. So I think it's actually better for everyone that Apple moved
Yeah, I
to
mean
Intel.
the hands were kind of
IBM
tied
didn't
by
care.
this.
I can assure you, IBM didn't care one bit about this. Many people said, "Oh, IBM's not going to like," but IBM really doesn't care. They sold a lot more stuff, even by the Xbox 360 alone. So, it's just obvious.
No, I mean the G5 when it did come out was a better chip, faster chip than Intel for certain, than the Pentium 4s. But the problem is that why people were saying this was they were feeling lied to about Apple of saying all these years saying PPC was better and then suddenly saying X86 is better. It's not that they well, yes, as a company, they're going to do that anyway. But the truth was that when the G5 came out, it was better than anything Intel had by far. But the problem is that IBM weren't doing anything with the G5. There were just minor improvements. They didn't get to 3 gigahertz like Apple said that they would. And then when the Intel came out with the Core 2, progress had been made. It was almost 4 years. And so the Intel chips were better than the PCs by then. So the move to the Intel was a very advantageous move because it moved them off of this slow-moving hardware platform and onto something that was going to be much more guaranteed and dynamic.
Yeah.
At least not the fact that they couldn't make a G5 laptop because of the heat problems.
Yeah, and of course, I mean, they make some improvements by going like dual-core and even quad-core, I'm not entirely sure. And by improving some of the power management features of the G5, but in the end, it can hold a candle to whatever Intel and AMD were putting out by that time. So it only made sense to move to x86. It might not be fun from a geek perspective, but in the end, it was the choice to make. I mean, it was pretty obvious. I mean, back then, there was a lot of, it was weird then, and there were a lot of question marks. But let me put it like this: in retrospect, it was a good move. I mean, you can, all the doubts are swept aside by the sheer success of Apple right now. So it was a good move.
Oh, hang on, sorry, I just got something in Twitter, and I don't know if I can confirm this, but I've just read this, that the Pirate Party has won, and the Swedish Pirate Party has won their elections.
Huh, they've won a seat in the European Parliament? You're kidding, right? Let me see.
We'll have to talk about that later because I can't confirm it yet. I'm not certain of the, you know, if I can't verify this particular news article I'm reading. But yeah, that's just odd. I was not expecting that.
Well, I believe there's some coverage here. Well, anyway, let's just move on.
Okay. The Apple thing is it's easy to look at it now, but back then it just I particularly remember this because my Sony laptop had broken. I'd accidentally dropped it. It was only 2 years old, rather annoyingly. And so I was looking to buy a new laptop, and so, Apple had made this announcement that they were moving to Intel chips. So I knew Intel computers were on their way. And they announced the MacBook Pro, and that came out in February. So then I was on the seat of, do I spend this much money on a computer when I can't run Windows on it? And all of my current workflow is all completely Windows based. I'll have to throw out all of my software on my main machine and move to doing Macway things. Yeah. So I waited until I don't know if everybody remembers, you probably do, about the competition that was set up to get Windows running on a Mac.
Yeah.
Some guy set up a competition for people to donate money that will be paid to the first person that could get Windows running on a Mac.
Yeah.
The total got up to $13,000, and in March, March 2006, the solution was finally found. It was two hackers found the solution at the same time.
Yeah.
And it was called Narf and Blanker. My respects still go out to them even now for what they did, because that was quite incredible hacking. They basically did a sort of a BIOS re-implementation in EFI to get Windows XP to install.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the instant that news came out, I knew, that's it, I'm switching to Mac. Because even if I couldn't get on with OS X, then I could always install Windows XP, or let alone the fact that I could dual boot so that all of my current workflow, my legacy workflow, could stay in Windows, and then I could slowly migrate over to Mac OS X software and everything, because it was a complete unknown to me at the time what Mac OS X was like.
Mm-hmm.
And then 2 months, less than a month later, Apple then released Bootcamp.
Oh yeah, that was it. They released it really quickly after the competition was over. So.
Yeah. To think what it must have been like in Apple when they knew they were making Bootcamp and this competition was going on, and the engineers must have been itching to have entered the competition.
Yeah, and won $13,000. Yeah, that's pretty interesting. My story is completely different on this, by the way. Technically, I still haven't moved to Intel. I'm still running PowerPC Max, and I've run PowerPC Max still. I mean, from a Cube to a PowerBook to the Power Mac that I have now, and my iMac G3, and now I have the Hackintosh again, between quotation marks. So I've never actually bought an Intel Mac. I've borrowed a couple of them from Apple to make reviews and everything, but I've never actually bought one. So I'm still one of the I'm not a proud owner of PowerPC Max, but I'm still one of those guys that's still interested in how the future of the PowerPC Mac is going to be. But you know, now that Snow Lab has been announced, I mean, I have to ditch. Well, not have to ditch them, but I always want to run the latest and greatest, and I can't do that anymore on my PPC machines when Snow Lab gets released. So For me, I'd have to
But
suck it up.
they say the articles about the fact that this move that happened 4 years ago and just how much it's changed, I think, Apple and the Mac landscape now, really, because before it was, you didn't have virtual machines, you couldn't do virtualization, you could, but it wasn't the same thing,
No.
and you didn't have dual boot, and you didn't have this flexibility of the Mac platform. It really was over there, and now, well, even Mac laptops are some of the best platform hardware to run Windows on, even.
Yeah, definitely.
So things have changed so much, I think, really, and it's hard to even imagine it now, really, a world before Apple having that kind of flexibility. Anyway, sorry, I'm getting really off track here. Really,
Let's move on. We were already at like 2 hours or something. It's insane.
yeah.
And it's really late here.
Really late.
We should move on.
Sorry.
We've got two items left to do, so I think we can pretty much skip the what hardware to build a Mac for, because it's basically the same thing that I wrote last time, but with different
Yeah.
hardware. So we can skip that one. We should make a few notes about React OS. It's really interesting. Some people were interested. People can read the article. It's titled "React OS Gets Various Science Certificate and a Better SATA Driver." The topic that I really want to touch on is someone asked, and I didn't make a comment about that again because I've been really busy this weekend. What's so important about getting a Various Science Certificate, and why do other software distributors not use it? And I think it has to do with the fact that people could use React OS to make their own React OS distribution, so to speak, but insert Windows code in there, insert Windows DLLs, insert Windows drivers from Microsoft and code from Microsoft in general, and put that out on the web under the name of React OS, which would be a really big problem for React OS. And using the VeriSign certificate, they can have a really solid way of making sure of putting their own actual releases that are guaranteed to be free of Microsoft code, and they stand behind the guarantee that there's no Microsoft code in there. They can sign those certificate with the they can sign those that code with their own certificate and have it, it's unilaterally it's their code, period. But if it won't be mixed up with maybe tinkerers or individuals who make their own React OS distribution, but insert Microsoft code in there to make it run better or whatever, and then put those out on Tor networks or anything. So this is basically a safeguard that can say, hey, look, our own code is safe, but the only code that we will guarantee is free of Microsoft code, so free of any possible legal problems, is our own code, and it's signed with this certificate, period. So I think that's mostly what this is about. In addition, an additional benefit here has to do with the fact that 64-bit versions of Windows require signed drivers, and drivers that are not signed will not run, which I think is a really good thing. But the problem with that, of course, is that a VeriSign certificate probably isn't cheap. I don't know the whole verification process, I have no idea. But it's probably not cheap. So, but the React OS project said, well, we have the certificate now, we will help. At least we're thinking about setting up a system where we can help open source projects that may not have the financial means to get such a certificate to still get their code signed for Windows and for the 64-bit versions of Windows, of course. And they say we'll still apply the same code quality standard and all that stuff, but it would help open source projects. So I think it's a really good thing. It's really a two strikes here, helping other projects get their code signed for Windows, and a safeguard for themselves for any possible legal threats. So I think it's a good thing overall. And of course, the rest of the article deals with improvements in the code, which you can just read for yourself. There's no use in just regurgitating that. So there's a better SATA driver, and the first steps in getting Windows video drivers to run inside React OS, which is pretty cool. So. Again, I don't see the use for the React OS project. I don't think they're ever going to get anywhere, but it's insanely awesome what they've been able to achieve so far. I mean, a lot of respect out to those guys, because this is an incredibly arduous task of re-implementing an entire closed source operating system from scratch to be binary and source code compatible. It's insane. I think it's one of the most technically interesting projects in the operating system business right now. It's insanely cool. I don't see the use for it. I don't think that I will ever get anywhere or to any means of me using it instead of Windows, but that doesn't negate the fact that it is insanely cool stuff, basically.
Okay. Let's just
We should
finish.
wrap this up.
I'm exhausted.
Same here.
Okay. Okay, let's just say the final meta, the usual. Email. Any questions, any concerns, anything you would like to add, anything you'd like to contribute, please email us at osnews-crew@osnews.com. Twitter. You can follow us on Twitter, although what we say has no real relevance to OS News. It's our personal thing.
Definitely
I like
not.
username. My username is Croc. That's KROC. And
My username is Tom Howarda, which is THOMHOLWERDA. Just go to the Rest News website and you see it plastered all over the place. It's just Dutch spelling, so anyway.
okay. That just about wraps everything up.
Yeah, so I hope
We'd like to
we hope you enjoyed.
thank you.
We're tired. Can you hear it? I'll just do the little thank you thing. We hope you enjoyed the
Okay.
show, and it's a long one. I hope you bear with us through the entire thing, and we hope you're gonna listen again next time. So enjoy the week and enjoy the podcast. And this is Tom Howarda signing off again.
And Croc Heyman signing off. Good night.
Bye bye. Good night, definitely.